Let's have a seat again. Well, we need to move towards a close, but we've got one more little section. We've tried to describe God's holiness. We've tried to look at a few stories that have inspired us. And I've got to tell you, the same thing happened here this morning as happened at Robs Park. That the two stories just were so profound and meant the world. If that's all we've done this morning, that would have been worth it. In 1 Peter chapter 2, last month we looked at the word genos, which meant that our identity has changed. It was, you are a chosen people. This month we're looking at the next phrase, where Peter says, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. And when he writes this, he's reflecting back into chapter 1, verse 16, where he says, he quotes from the Old Testament, where God says, be holy because I am holy. Okay, wait a minute. We've just spent the last 45 minutes talking about how it means separate, apart, distinct, separated, exalted. And we've tried to create this biggest gap that we can imagine, that God's holiness is so awesome. His glory fills the whole earth. And now we say, yeah, be holy because I am holy. That's like telling me, yeah, go ahead, jump over that 7'6" bar. Or go dunk like Michael Jordan. Or go paint like Robert Bateman. Or go play the violin like Akeem Kamara. And I go, yeah, actually, that would be easier than being holy because he is holy. How does that work? Well, here's the kicker. In his holiness, the Father sent the Son to demonstrate what it means to be holy. There's so many stories we could use, but the one that grabbed my attention this week was the story in John chapter 8, where Jesus is in Jerusalem, and he's there for the festival, and he's sitting on a cement block or a big rock in the corner of a courtyard, and he's sort of teaching a group of people, and all of a sudden these Pharisees, these men, catch this woman in adultery. Of course, your mind should explore, well, how they know what was going on, and with whom was it going on, and where was it going on, and where did they know how to find her, and you get the picture. But they grab this woman, who probably doesn't have a whole lot of clothes on, and they take her and they throw her into the midst of the crowd right there in front of Jesus. They're trying to trap her. All right, so you say that you're God, and God's holy. Well, right now, you probably can't find anybody on the face of the earth who is less holy than this woman. So what are you going to do with her? It's an amazing story, remember? Jesus, he's so gentle, he's so gracious. We don't have any record in the story during the first part that he actually looks at the woman or draws attention to her, but actually he saves her from embarrassment and he allows her to just be there. He keeps his head down. He draws in the sand, writes in the sand as if it was a chalkboard. We don't know what he began to write, but we do know that it was probably related to what he said to the Pharisees. Again, without looking, he's got his head down. He just says, okay, any of you who are without sin, you throw the first stone. In other words, any of you that think you're more holy than she is, go ahead, do what the law says. Throw a stone. The Pharisees made a mistake. They made a huge mistake. They lived under the assumption that holiness meant separated, exalted, distinct, set apart. And that the gap was so big that somehow God couldn't deal with that gap. Somehow when unholiness was presented to holy, that God, because he was so holy, had to get rid of the unholy. Made a huge mistake. You see, they forgot about his name. His name was Yahweh, the holy name that they were scared to say, scared to write, but they forgot what it meant. Because when we go back into the Old Testament, we begin to understand what it meant. Yahweh means a God who redeems, a God who leads to life for the sake of the world. They forgot how he acted or what he began to teach. You see, Jesus might have said to the Pharisees on that occasion, they knew it. It was implicit in what he was saying. You're comparing yourself to this woman. And sure, fair enough. You're more holy than she is, acting that way, at least anyways, at the point. But what I need you to do is compare yourself not to her, but to my Father who's in heaven. And then you'll recognize you're actually no different than she is. See, they forgot that holiness was not to just set apart God, but to set him apart for the sake of entering back into the world, that the holy may make the unholy holy. Did I come out in English? I was in Ohio this last weekend at a fairly big church with a number of leaders, and the guy who was the pastor got up and told the story of something that happened about 15 years ago. It was amazing. Some of you didn't know who Greg Joy was. That's okay. You're too young for that. But you do know who Howard Stern is, yes?
Yeah.
And lots of you know that Howard Stern is not just famous because he's a judge on America's Got Talent. Now, he's famous for his radio show from New York. Or infamous, maybe, is a better way of describing that. Because if you know anything about the show, you know that there's tons of radio stations all over North America that have banned him because he's so vulgar on the show. Well, this church was doing a sermon series that was called What Would Jesus Say To? And this particular week, they put up on their big sign up in front of the church that happened to be by a highway, so that thousands of cars every morning were seeing this billboard, this marquee. What Would Jesus Say To Howard Stern? That was the topic of the sermon for the next week. Well, it's Monday morning, it's only 8 o'clock, and already thousands of cars have seen this. So much so that somebody has phoned New York, phoned the Howard Stern show, and now Howard Stern is on the phone to the pastor of the church wanting him to come on the air. You can imagine what that conversation would be like. Well, the pastor was smart enough to say, oh, wait a minute, I think I better think this one through before I do this. So what they did is they agreed on a few of the sort of parameters of the conversation, and they agreed they'd talk on Thursday. So Thursday morning comes along, and the pastor has all kinds of people in his church praying. He's got his mom praying. He's got all kinds of people praying. And Howard phones up, and they go on the air. Well, they start the conversation, and you know where it's going to go. But Howard at least starts with, so, Pastor, what would Jesus say to me? How do you think he responded? It was brilliant. He said, Howard, I know this for sure. Jesus is for you. Jesus is so holy that he's for you. I mean, Howard expected him, like most of the world expects us, to respond and go, well, you know, he's God's holy and you're unholy, so therefore, get your act together or guess what? But he never went that way. Because this guy, Greg, the pastor, knew that holiness was not just set apart to be distinct so that we would never have the opportunity of being with him. Holiness actually meant that God was so holy he entered back into our unholiness to make the unholy holy. Be holy because I am holy. How? Well, we're going to discover that in the next number of weeks as we come later in the text to see how we can live like that. Friends, we've got to understand God is holy and all of his other attributes come from that. He's exalted. And that exalting or that separateness or that distinctiveness of who he is causes two things in us. Has to. We come to worship him the way Isaiah did or Moses did or lots of different stories with this incredible sense of awe. Not only do we worship him like that, we witness to who he is by the way that he fills us with his Spirit so that we might live holy lives as well.